Chapter 15. But slowly at the end, Chief Inspector Heat waited with the appearance of turning over in his mind all he had just said. But, as a matter of fact, considering the advisability of saying something more, the Assistant Commissioner cut his hesitation short. "You believe there were two men?" he asked, without uncovering his eyes. The Chief Inspector thought it more than probable. In his opinion, the two men had parted from each other within 100 yards from the observatory walls. He explained also how the other man could have got out of the park speedily without being observed. The fog, though not very dense, was in his favor. He seemed to have escorted the other to the spot, and then to have left him there to do the job single-handed. Taking the time those two were seen coming out of Maze Hill Station by the old woman, and the time when the explosion was heard, the Chief Inspector thought that the other man might have been actually at the Greenwich Park Station, ready to catch the next train up, at the moment his comrade was destroying himself so thoroughly. "Very thoroughly, eh?" murmured the Assistant Commissioner from under the shadow of his hand. The Chief Inspector in a few vigorous words described the aspect of the remains. "The coroner's jury will have a treat," he added grimly. The Assistant Commissioner uncovered his eyes. "We shall have nothing to tell them," he remarked languidly. He looked up, and for a time watched the markedly non-committal attitude of his Chief Inspector. His nature was one that is not easily accessible to illusions. He knew that a department is at the mercy of its subordinate officers, who have their own conceptions of loyalty. His career had begun in a tropical colony. He had liked his work there. It was police work. He had been very successful in tracking and breaking up certain nefarious secret societies amongst the natives. Then he took his long leave, and got married rather impulsively. It was a good match from a worldly point of view, but his wife formed an unfavorable opinion of the colonial climate on hearsay evidence. On the other hand, S.E. had influential connections. It was an excellent match. But he did not like the work he had to do now. He felt himself dependent on too many subordinates and too many masters. The near presence of that strange emotional phenomenon called public opinion weighed upon his spirits, and alarmed him by its irrational nature. No doubt that from ignorance he exaggerated to himself its power for good and evil, especially for evil, and the rough east winds of the English spring, which agreed with his wife, augmented his general mistrust of men's motives, and of the efficiency of their organization. The futility of office work especially appalled him on those days, so trying to his sensitive liver. He got up, unfolding himself to his full height, and with a heaviness of step remarkable in so slender a man, moved across the room to the window. The pane streamed with rain, and the short street he looked down into lay wet and empty, as if swept clear suddenly by a great flood. It was a very trying day, choked in raw fog to begin with, and now drowned in cold rain. The flickering, blurred flames of gas lamps seemed to be dissolving in a watery atmosphere. And the lofty pretensions of a mankind oppressed by the miserable indignities of the weather appeared as a colossal and hopeless vanity deserving of scorn, wonder, and compassion. "Horrible, horrible," thought the Assistant Commissioner to himself, with his face near the window pane. "He have been having this sort of thing now for 10 days. No, a fortnight. He ceased to think completely for a time. That utter stillness of his brain lasted about 3 seconds. Then he said perfunctorily, "Colin, you have set inquiries on foot for tracing that other man up and down the line?" He had no doubt that everything needful had been done. Chief Inspector Heat knew, of course, thoroughly the business of manhunting. And these were the routine steps too, that would be taken as a matter of course by the merest beginner. A few inquiries amongst the ticket collectors, and the porters of the two small railway stations would give additional details as to the appearance of the two men. The inspection of the collected tickets would show at once where they came from that morning. It was elementary, and could not have been neglected. Accordingly, the chief inspector answered that all this had been done directly the old woman had come forward with her deposition. And he mentioned the name of a station. That's where they came from, sir, he went on. The porter who took the tickets at Maze Hill remembers two chaps answering to the description passing the barrier. They seemed to him two respectable working men of a superior sort, sign painters or house decorators. The big man got out of a third-class compartment backward, with a bright tin can in his hand. On the platform he gave it to carry to the fair young fellow who followed him. All this agrees exactly with what the old woman told the police sergeant in Greenwich. The assistant commissioner, still with his face turned to the window, expressed his doubt as to these two men having had anything to do with the outrage. All this theory rested upon the utterances of an old charwoman who had been nearly knocked down by a man in a hurry. Not a very substantial authority indeed, unless on the ground of sudden inspiration, which was hardly tenable. Frankly now, could she have been really inspired? He queried, with grave irony, keeping his back to the room, as if entranced by the contemplation of the town's colossal forms half lost in the night. He did not even look round when he heard the mutter of the word providential from the principal subordinate of his department, whose name, printed sometimes in the papers, was familiar to the great public as that of one of its zealous and hard-working protectors. Chief Inspector Heat raised his voice a little. Strips and bits of bright tin were quite visible to me, he said. That's a pretty good corroboration. And these men came from that little country station, the assistant commissioner mused aloud, wondering. He was told that such was the name on two tickets out of three given up out of that train at Maze Hill. The third person who got out was a hawker from Gravesend, well known to the porters. The chief inspector imparted that information in a tone of finality with some ill humor, as loyal servants will do in the consciousness of their fidelity, and with the sense of the value of their loyal exertions. And still the assistant commissioner did not turn away from the darkness outside, as vast as a sea. Two foreign anarchists coming from that place, he said, apparently to the window pane. Tea's rather unaccountable. Apostrophe, yes, sir. But it would be still more unaccountable if that Michaelis weren't staying in a cottage in the neighborhood. At the sound of that name, falling unexpectedly into this annoying affair, the assistant commissioner dismissed brusquely the vague remembrance of his daily whist party at his club. It was the most comforting habit of his life, in a mainly successful display of his skill without the assistance of any subordinate. He entered his club, to play from 5 to 7, before going home to dinner, forgetting for those 2 hours, whatever was distasteful in his life, as though the game were a beneficent drug for allaying the pangs of moral discontent. His partners were the gloomily humorous editor of a celebrated magazine, a silent, elderly barrister with malicious little eyes, and a highly martial, simple-minded old colonel with nervous brown hands. They were his club acquaintances merely. He never met them elsewhere except at the card table. But they all seemed to approach the game in the spirit of co-sufferers, as if it were indeed a drug against the secret ills of existence. And every day as the sun declined over the countless roofs of the town, a mellow, pleasurable impatience, resembling the impulse of a sure and profound friendship, lightened his professional labors. And now this pleasurable sensation went out of him with something resembling a physical shock, and was replaced by a special kind of interest in his work of social protection, an improper sort of interest, which may be defined best as a sudden and alert mistrust of the weapon in his hand. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.